8 a.m. Sunday morning, out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 1340 a.m., 98.9 FM, home of the Western Conference Champion 2018 Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman. If you are new to the show, we are here every Monday morning, I should say Sunday morning, 8 to 9 a.m. Joining me in studio, in place of Jose Vellante, who is on vacation in California, Tim Unglesby, the co-host of Heatwave Sport, Saturday and Sunday nights, 10 p.m. on Fox Sports Radio. Tim, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate you letting me sit in today.
Absolutely. Up first, we have already on the phone from Detroit. At least that's where he's at right now. Coach of the Las Vegas Aces, former NBA star, two-time NBA champion with the Bad Boys, the Detroit Pistons, back in 89 and 90. Coach Bill Laimbeer, welcome to Out of Line.
Oh, thanks a lot. I'm good to be on.
So back in Detroit, you were just here a week ago, man. How's everything going? 1 week removed. I mean, how long does it take to get past coming so close to the playoffs after starting 1-7?
Well, you know, this year we weren't expected to make the playoffs, so we had a pretty good run. Unfortunately, kept a bit short. So we're really excited about next year. We think we got a top four draft pick, and we're the youngest team in the league. So we're more focused on the future than the present.
Coach, tell me something. With this team, you started 1-7. When did it click? I mean, you know, someone like Asia Wilson, obviously turning out to be one of the best players in the league, I think, in a couple of years. As Tim said at the last game I was at with you, that they were going to, she'll eventually be the best player in the WNBA. When did it click?
Well, you know, I told everybody that we wouldn't know who we were until July, because we had some players miss training camp with overseas commitments. We had an injury. We had a bunch of nucleus, and I'm a new coach. So I figured around July, and that's when it really happened for us. Everybody kind of understood what their roles were, and we started to win some basketball games.
Next season, you said you're looking forward to that. You pick up where you left off this year, and what are you expecting to add? What do you expect to be that much different?
Well, we got the lotteries on Tuesday, and, you know, we get the second most ping pong balls. So hopefully, well, we get a really good player. We're guaranteed at least a top four, so that's a big positive. I have a couple log jams I'm going to have to clear with some trades, a couple positions during the off season, and you know, Las Vegas is a great place for free agents, so I think we're lining up. All the stars are aligning for us to have a really good opportunity going forward.
Coach, we know you're back home. But what's the off season like for you? Do you get any downtime?
Well, I'm not really back home. I'm kind of in transit. I got a place in Northern Michigan that we enjoy. So, you know, I'm back and forth to Las Vegas. I am the president also, so I have a lot of work to do right now. We're doing budgets and things like that. So I'm going to spend a lot of time in Las Vegas during the offseason.
Coach, initially, when you went to the Detroit Shock back in the early part of this century, what was the decision, I mean, to talk you into coming into the WNBA? What made you make that decision? And really, I mean, it helped rejuvenate the league, what you did with the Shock.
Well, you know, the Detroit had a franchise then, Detroit Shock, and they weren't doing very well. And I wanted to get into the front office part of the business to understand, you know, what that was about, because we are a small microcosm of the NBA. So their team started off so poorly, and I told them they had to make a coaching change, and they said, okay, well, you're it. And I said, oh, wow, okay. So I finally did it, and it's been a great ride, and I've had a lot of fun.
Are there aspirations to coach in the NBA?
I used to way back when. You know, I thought I wanted to see how my style would play out in the NBA, but, you know, I'm 61 now, and the WNBA is not as big a grind as the NBA. NBA pays more, obviously, but I really enjoy doing what I'm doing, and it works for me.
I know your main concern is the Las Vegas Aces. Do you have your eye on the playoffs, Coach, and you saw what Taurasi did in that first-round game?
Yeah, you know, I watch most of the games, you know, just to see, you know, how teams are growing or how, you know, like are falling off like Minnesota and Los Angeles did this year. But, you know, overall, you know, I wish we were there, but it's not our time right now. So hopefully our players are watching to understand how intense it gets, and our time is coming.
Coach, best memory right now of the WNBA, obviously you won three championships there. A lot has gone on since you joined this league back in 2002. Took a little hiatus from 2009 for a few years, but what's your best memory?
Well, I think just the growth of the league and the players. The players probably more than the league. The players today are unbelievable. They're bigger, faster, stronger than any time before. They're smarter, they're dedicated basketball professional athletes. they're really good, and they're getting better every year. The players coming in, so I think it's been so much fun to be around just to see the growth of the league over the past 15, 18 years. It's been a lot of fun.
Many of the press conferences you spoke about how the Las Vegas crowd came together with the team this season. Has Bill Laimbeer actually gotten to go out and experience Las Vegas from just to have some time off and hang out in the city?
No, not really. I signed up in November, and we had to build this franchise from scratch, you know, and get everything organized for the season in such a short period of time. And then this year, the season was condensed by 21 days because of the World Championships are in September. So it's been very hectic, and I really haven't had a chance to get out. I've only played one round of golf in Las Vegas. But I think in this offseason, I'm going to get out and experience some of the stuff and play more rounds of golf.
Coach, one of the things with the WNBA this year, obviously big news, the game that you guys missed, or I should say got canceled because of commercial flights and some timing with the planes. One of the issues, and it created an issue with revenue in the WNBA, something that's been heavily talked about, especially towards the end of the season. I was saying to Tim at the game, wondering, as far as sponsorship goes, it seems like most of the WNBA sponsors are the same sponsors that the NBA has. And, of course, they're going to give one-tenth of the revenue to the WNBA that they do to the NBA. Why wouldn't the WNBA, and maybe they are, go after more for lack of a better term, gender type of sponsorships that would appeal to women? I think you get maybe huge money out of them. It doesn't seem like anyone ever goes after those.
Well, they are. You know, they don't misread us. They're working very hard on sponsorships and getting people to come to games. You know, we're still a very infant league. You know, we're 22 years in, but you know that's a very short period of time. But with the men at 22, and they were nothing. So we're growing. It's going to take time. Obviously, the men have more revenue. They have played more games. They have bigger arenas and bigger sponsorship dollars. So you can't really equate the two at this point in time, and probably never will. But I think our league is growing every day, and we're going to be successful now. It's going to be even more successful as time goes by.
Well, no women's professional league had lasted a decade, let alone 22 seasons. It's been pretty incredible. Tremendous resiliency that the league has showed, and I think we're going to see that continue. How big do you think it's going to be for the WNBA to have the All-Star game here next year?
I think it's going to be huge, not only for, you know, for our fans in Las Vegas to experience that, but I think it's time for our league to put on a show. You know, the men do a really nice job of their All-Star weekend, and I think Las Vegas is a perfect spot for us to expand our format. And I think it's a destination place, and I think a lot of the WNBA fans and the season ticket holders for all the cities are going to migrate there, just like it was a Final Four situation.
Asia Wilson, we talked about her for a minute, though, morphing into one of the best players in the league. Watching her play and her dominance and her ability to take over a game is pretty incredible. What makes her so special, and do you see her eventually maybe be in the face of the WNBA?
Well, what makes her special athletic-wise is she's very quick. I've never seen a big man or woman be able to attack off the dribble like she can. She's tall and long and shoots from a very high spot, so you can't block her shot. But I think what really makes her special is her consistency. The hallmark of a great professional basketball player is every night you know what to count on, and every night she produces, and you know you're going to be able to count on her for 20 points and 10 rebounds every night.
Talking to Bill Laimbeer, coach of the WNBA Las Vegas Aces, former two-time NBA champion, several years in the NBA, mostly with the Detroit Pistons. Coach, reflecting back on that, WNBA being from Detroit, I got to experience the melee that was the Bad Boys, the back-to-back champions. When you reflect back on that and the build-up to get to that point, I thought you should have won three in a row if Isaiah doesn't hurt his ankle in game six against the LA Lakers. I think you guys maybe take three. What is your best memory looking back on all that, and how much did that help you today to coach in the WNBA?
Well, I think the best memories is we actually won one, won two, obviously. But, you know, if you play that hard and you put all that energy and your mental and physical well-being on the line, if you go away without a championship, it's just so long-term and lifelong disappointing. So, yeah, we happened to win one, was relief. We won a couple, was you know, unbelievable. But I think it did help. You know, I can explain to the players I have today how to grow into this thing. And what, it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. And you grow as a unit. You learn about each other and the coach and your fan base, and you all grow together.
You know, real quickly, with the Detroit Pistons of that era, one of the things I talk to people about all the time is how exciting that group of guys were and how special you and talented you were. Starting with, I think, the guy in the backcourt, Isaiah Thomas. And when people talk about, you know, guys in the NBA that really helped revolutionize the game, sometimes his name gets left out, and it drives me crazy. How special and talented was Isaiah Thomas on the basketball court?
He was unbelievable. He was a leader. And he was he's a visionary, and he still is very visionary in many ways. But he did a lot of stuff, not only for our basketball team, but also for the NBA as time went along. So he's one of those that will never get the credit he deserves, especially being the small guard that he was and took the pounding that he did. But nobody could ever take away his championships.
Well, I think also, Coach, and I'll say this, but I don't think you ever got fully the credit you deserve either. You were known as a guy that pushed other guys around, intimidated, but I think Isaiah Thomas said it best a long time ago. He goes, what aggravated the other guys the most wasn't his physicality, it was the fact that he was damn good. And as high a percentage of an outside shooter for a big man there was, the free throws every year was up close to 90%. Pretty incredible for a big guy, but one of the things was your intensity and your fire. How much of that has mellowed over time? Because I got a small story to share with you before I let you go, but I just want to know, in your opinion, how much has that mellowed over time?
Well, you're never as intense as you are as a player. That's just a given. You know, as a coach, I was more intense probably, you know, 12, 14 years ago than I am today, but I use more of my experience and knowledge to teach them, because at the end of the day, coaches don't play the game.
They don't. Okay, I got to tell you this story. So back in, I think it was the second to last year of your career before you left, I think, and was it 84, 85 when you retired?
I left in 93.
So this was the 92 season. You played the Indiana Pacers. I think you didn't have a great game. You went like 1-10 from the field. I was a brand new young reporter, and you went into the locker room and you said you didn't want to talk to any of us. So we were all kind of a little bit intimidated, and you were standing by your locker talking to Al Ackerman. Remember Al Ackerman?
Yes, I do.
And I was talking to Fred McLeod, the play-by-play guy way back then. It was Pass Sports, and like I said, I was a young guy. I had a brand new microphone, and I was kind of pointing it in your direction, but I wasn't recording you, and you got really upset with me. Matter of fact, you stood up, you started yelling at me, and you were kind of eating the chicken wings that they would put in the Palace locker room with people after the game. They'd put these little trays of hors d'oeuvres, like chicken wings, ribs. You remember that? It was pretty good stuff. I didn't get to eat any, but I was always jealous that you guys got to.
Like, I would remember that long ago for some minor incident.
this was a huge incident for me. I was a young guy, but you stood up, you yelled at me, and you were spitting chicken wings all over my face and my shirt. Do you remember the incident at all?
No, if I don't, but it's a good growing experience for yourself.
It really was. Scared the living hell out of me, Bill. You got a 7-foot guy screaming at you, but I wasn't recording you. I did show you that I wasn't really recording you. But anyways, listen, really a pleasure to have you on the show. Look forward to what goes on in the WNBA in the future. I hope they get some more sponsors, and I really hope you guys are flying privately rather than commercially in the near future.
All right, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Coach Bill Laimbeer, Las Vegas Aces. Tim, I know you've been following the NBA, the WNBA, since its inception 22 years ago. I actually was back in the WNBA days covering the Detroit Shock, believe it or not, when I think the rims were only 9 feet and the ball was smaller. And it's come a long, long way since then. When you first started covering it, did you think it was a fad, or did you think it was something that was going to morph into a thing that's 2 decades old now and still going strong?
You know, I was a younger kid, so I liked a lot of the niche sport. I thought that was a niche sport. Indoor soccer, arena football. I was into a lot of those. I wanted to be successful because I think as in the world of sports, you need that, men's and women's. I just didn't think it would happen, even with the NBA really backing it at the time. But here we are 2 decades later, and they, like you said right at the beginning of the segment, they've had a lot of trials and tribulations. But I tell you what, in the last 3 or 4 years, I've really seen the business model change. And, you know, just the little things of moving into smaller arenas are really going to help this league start to get back where it needs to be in order to be considered a top sport for women's professional athletes Yeah, it's on the right path.
Well, the only thing that's sad about it to me, and we talked about it when we were at the game a couple weeks ago, is the lack of revenue. These girls basically come over here and play to come home, mm-hmm. to play in front of their families, see their families, because the majority of them are making a lot more money playing basketball in Europe or overseas. And, you know, they make a great deal of money over there, and they live like queens, for lack of a better term. Is that something that the WNBA is going to step up? Because one of the things that all these women have to fear, it's almost like going and playing in another league when you play Major League Baseball. Like some of the players that are trying to hang on go and play in the winter. A lot of them take the time off once you've made it and established yourself. But for these girls, they're established in Europe. They're coming over here more or less just for a showcase and, again, to spend time. They don't want to get hurt. They get hurt, they lose their livelihood, and they're getting hurt for peanuts in the WNBA.
They could make anywhere from 3 to 10 times the amount of money, Brian. That's a significant amount of money, and a lot of them have left now their hometowns to go ready and get trained out for Europe. I don't know. I don't know where that money's going to come from. That's the issue. I know they have a collective bargaining agreement coming up, but I don't know where the money's going to come from to pay them like that. And I think you'll see next year a couple of the stars not come back. I know Kambaj out of Dallas was talking about not being able to come back next year. You just don't know, and that's the thing. The time that they're playing here in the States, that's supposed to be their off season. So there is no off season for them right now. It makes a difference. I believe Taurasi a couple years ago sat out. It was paid by her European team in Russia to sit out a WNBA season. So, I mean, they got to go where the money is, and I don't know where that money's going to come from here stateside.
Well, I, like I said, what is wrong with it? I mentioned it to Bill, and it's not taboo. I mean, you almost feel like you're starting to get sexist when I say, why don't you go after tampon or cosmetics or other things? I don't see any commercials. I don't see any signage for those type of sponsorships. I see the same thing. I see Nike. I see Adidas. I see Budweiser. The same sponsorships they're going after for the NBA, and you're not going to get the revenue. Like I said, you're going to get 1/10 of the revenue out of them because you're not getting the share of television ratings. You're not getting more than 5,000 or 6,000 people in the seats typically. Not that that's a bad thing, but I will bet companies like, say, Kotex might throw a lot of money at a sponsorship like this because they don't get the opportunity to sponsor professional teams because in most cases, it wouldn't make sense. Here it does. Is it getting better marketing teams, or are they just, they don't know how to do it, how to go after these sponsors? Because wouldn't that make sense to you?
It makes sense. I told you that at the game. I said, that's a great idea. Maybe we should get WNBA president Borders on to talk to her and see why they don't go after it. Maybe they do. Maybe we're missing something, but I think you're right. You're onto something. Cosmetics, another great one that would fit in for that league. That's money that's untapped somewhere.
Well, we'll see. I think other people are going to start talking about it because, Tim, they do need to get the revenue. Not that the league won't survive, but it is very Bush to have a game postponed or canceled because of commercial airlines. That's ridiculous. When you say a professional league getting a game getting canceled because of missed flights, all of a sudden it doesn't seem so professional, right?
You could also throw in that game possibly cost them an opportunity to make the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Should have been made up. And I said that. I said, what's going to happen if it comes down to one game? Which it did. And they didn't even make the game up. That's Bush. That would never happen in any other professional sport. No. It wouldn't.
They gave them the loss, actually.
They gave them a loss, yep. Yeah. And that killed them. So their fault that they missed a plane commercially. Anyway, listen, we're going to take a break out of line. We're coming back. I got a pretty cool blazing coming up for you after the break. Man, the Little League World Series, it's always magical things like this. You got this nasty hurricane that looks like it may be turning left and not pounding Maui like it was supposed to, but their team represented in the Little League World Series, and they could very well beat Korea. I think it's North Korea today. South Korea, excuse me. And win the Little League World Series, although I think Korea is going to beat them, man. They've got like two pitchers that are just unbelievable, and they saved one of them for this game today. And I think Hawaii is kind of scrambling. They've got three pitchers, and then there's a huge drop-off, and they might be out of those three pitchers coming into today. Always, that's the one thing with Little League. You know, you got to always find a way to keep pitchers. You only get so many innings. Listen, we'll talk about that. Also, nightcap, but there's a Golden Knight that's still not signed. Pretty significant. I want to ask Mags about that when we get back. And the 51s, man, winding down their final season at Cashman Field in old downtown Vegas. Your last chance to see them. We'll talk about that as well. This is Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio. Be right back. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why. This is This is why I'm hot. Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. A Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every day. America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And hey, coming up in a couple weeks with the NFL season about to kick off, I should say the regular season, we will be there every Monday night hosting the Monday night football parties and giving away replica jerseys, wing parties, and a whole lot more. Make sure you come on down. That is Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza every Monday night. And blazing this week, the Hawaii Little League team advanced to the Little League World Series Championship game yesterday by beating Georgia 3-0, completely on the arm of pitcher Itaiuka Kia, is I think the way you pronounce his name. It was a tough one. Check this out. He struck out the side three of the first four innings, a total of 15 strikeouts that hasn't been done in 17 years in the semifinal game. He throws a splitter, a curveball, a fastball, and a changeup, and he's 12 years old. I would say that's kind of blazing. So blazing brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Again, two happy hours every day in America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And real quickly, one of the final 51s reports. Matter of fact, we're going to do our final one will be next Sunday. But the Vegas 51s literally have, counting today, I think there's nine games left. These two are on the road. They play today and tomorrow against Sacramento, and then they are home against Tacoma and Sacramento. And that wraps up the season. Guys, you got seven more games to see the Las Vegas 51s play at Cashman Field in Old Downtown. It's iconic. It's where they've played the entire existence. They will be moving up to Red Rock very near, matter of fact, almost right across the street from City National Arena come next season. We're not 100% sure who they will be representing in the AAA affiliate of. I heard the Oakland A's are one of the front runners, but people, if you've never been out there, to me, it's one of the best-kept secrets in Vegas. It is a great night. You see the skyline, and you still got, matter of fact, one more chance this coming Friday night to see the final firework display. Their Friday night fireworks, I tell you all the time, if you haven't been down there, it rivals Disneyland. I mean, they spend a lot of money. They put on a great show. It's a great day for the kids, and you still got one more dollar beer night this Thursday night against Tacoma as well. That's always a good time. Las Vegas 51s, they are out of this world, and that was the Las Vegas 51s report. And finally, Max, hit me with night cap if you got it.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, restricted free agent Shea Theodore is still unsigned with less than 3 weeks from the start of training camp on September 13th. It's starting to get close to the danger zone for a possible holdout. And in the Vegas Golden Knights inaugural season, Theodore, who's only 23 years old right now, had 6 goals, 23 assists in only 61 games. If you remember, he started the season in Chicago, and then he ended up being one of their leaders, I believe second in average ice time with 20 minutes and 21 seconds a game for defensemen. He was extended a 1-year contract qualifying offer from the Knights in June, and the minimum salary he could be offered was like $875,000, right around there. He made $832,500 in the final year of his entry-level deal. Theodore will have arbitration rights as a restricted free agent the next 3 seasons and is eligible to become an unrestricted free agent in 2002. Unsigned players, for those of you wondering, they cannot participate in training camp, and it's not uncommon for players to miss the start of the regular season while negotiating a new contract. Mags, we've talked plenty on this show about Shea Theodore. How important to you is it to get this guy wrapped up?
Well, you have to have him in camp because I think the case can be made that he is your best defensive player. I mean, I think certainly Nate Schmidt's in that discussion as well, but Shea Theodore, clearly part of the future, you would think. Now, there is something that is a real possibility, and I don't know how likely it is. I shouldn't say a real possibility, something that is a possibility. It's very possible that maybe the Golden Knights are still trying to move Shea Theodore. And when I say move Shea Theodore, they may still be attempting to get Erik Karlsson from Ottawa.
I could live with that.
And if they were to get Erik Karlsson from Ottawa, you have to think Shea Theodore is going to be in that deal along with some other pieces. that may not have ever seen any regular season playing time in Vegas last year. But we've learned that George McPhee likes to play hardball. We've seen it with Nate Schmidt. We've seen it with William Karlsson. We saw it with David Perron and James Neal. George McPhee is not going to make a signing unless he is 100% positive that this signing is going to benefit the Golden Knights in the future. So there may be some questions about some things that Shea Theodore has done. I don't know what those are, but I do think that if Shea Theodore is in your plans to be part of the future of this team and you are not planning on moving him, you need to get him signed because time is starting to run out. Now, again, he started last season in Chicago. Clearly, that's not going to happen again this year. He will be probably your second-pairing defenseman along with Derek England. He's either going to be traded or he's going to be signed. I'm not worried about the 3 weeks. I think he will be in camp, even if it's a little bit late. I'm not concerned about him missing the start of the season because ultimately Shea Theodore wants to play hockey. That's what he does, and he's not going to not be in camp because he's going to sit out. He's a young guy. He didn't make a ton of money last year. He hasn't made a ton of money in his career. He's going to want to get paid. Like I said, it's a case where we've seen George McPhee play hardball in the past. He's never given in. Like you know, he allowed Perron and Neal to walk. They wanted too much. McPhee said, nope, see you later. Now, there were other motives behind that as well, the poor defensive play from those guys, according to George McPhee. But, you know, I think I'm not too concerned about it. I think Shea Theodore will be in camp, or Erik Karlsson will be a member of the Golden Knights before the start of the regular season on, what is it, October 4th?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, we've still have, in theory, we have a month and a half before we really need to start worrying about Shea Theodore.
I would agree. The one thing I will say is, yeah, Erik Karlsson would be a huge get, and that would be one of the few deals that I could see.
I don't know how likely that is. I mean,
well, still, but
it's a possibility.
And to me, like I was going to say, that's one of the few deals right now that I could see left on the table that would make sense, because Theodore only being 23 years old, and to me at 23, the way he plays offense as a defenseman, he's going to be one of the better defensemen in the league in 4 or 5 years from right now. And do you want to let this guy get away?
And that's just it. You have to decide if you want to bring in Erik Karlsson, who has a lot of time left on his contract, or you're going to have to sign to a large, long contract, you know, 7-8 years in the $80 million range. Or do you want to take a chance with Shea Theodore and hope that he turns into Erik Karlsson 4 or 5 years down the road? You know, it's a calculated gamble regardless of which route you go, because there's no guarantee that Erik Karlsson's going to come here and be the player he was 2 years ago. There's no guarantee that Shea Theodore is ever going to turn into one of the top 10 defensemen in the league. I think there's a case that could be made either way, but I don't think the Golden Knights are going to screw this up. I think either way, whether they trade Theodore, whether they acquire Karlsson, whether they sign Theodore to a long-term extension, I don't think there's a wrong answer here, because I think all of them are going to be good for the Golden Knights, because I have a lot of faith in George McPhee. You know, a lot of people, Capitals fans, I know Tim is a Capitals fan. You know, he saw the job that McPhee did in Washington, and yeah, you know what, they couldn't get over the hump. But before they got Ovechkin, the Capitals were a pretty bad franchise. You know, in between that time where they got Ovechkin and they were screwed out of a Stanley Cup thanks to Brett Hull's skate in the crease, they weren't a great franchise. And George McPhee turned that around. There was more than just Erik Karl or more than just Alexander Ovechkin that he brought into that team. So It's an interesting debate to have during the offseason, but I think come October 4th, I can't see any way on this planet that Shea Theodore is not a member of the Golden Knights on that opening night when they open up against the Flyers.
Yeah, I'd be shocked too. I think that just a formality, and as you said, George McPhee is going to get the best deal done. I think obviously Shea Theodore wants a longer term deal. George McPhee wants more to see, hey, do what you did last year and we'll pay you and give you a long term deal. I think Shea Theodore is probably looking at making in the vicinity of $3 to $4 million this year.
Well, and here's the thing. If I'm Shea Theodore, I want to make more than what Colin Miller's making. Because remember, they signed Colin Miller a 4-year deal worth, I think, $4 million a year. I like Colin Miller a lot.
Love Colin Miller.
Shea Theodore is a better player than Colin Miller.
I think both ends of the ice, he's a better player.
So yeah. If I'm Shea Theodore, I'm looking at that like, hey, you know what? You gave Colin Miller this much money. I think I deserve at least that much money, and I don't know what the numbers are that have been thrown to Theodore's agent, but clearly they're not numbers that he likes.
I think it's more of a short-term, long-term thing than it is the numbers. I think they're probably okay with the numbers. I think Shea Theodore wants the numbers to continue longer than George McPhee's willing to ink now.
And you know what? Can you blame him?
If you're
Shea Theodore and you're looking for a six-year, $5 million a year deal?
Hell no. I want the deal, long-term deal. It's professional sports. He could blow out his knee in the first game and everything gets screwed up.
Yeah.
Give him a good guarantee up front and give him a longer-term deal. I think they'll end up settling for something along 3 years with a couple of option years, depending on what Theodore does. There'll be some type of incentives built in. Like you said, Mags, no one should ever or will ever question George McPhee. And if you do, you don't know hockey real well. Tim, again, with Noah Washington, listen, we've got to take a break. We're going to come back. I talked to Tony Sanchez yesterday. You'll hear that on the other side. Pretty cool. Actually, not yesterday. I talked to him on Friday. He has a day off today, a couple hours, so we let him off the hook. And we also got Alan Snell coming up. We've got Alonzo giving away some tickets to the fourth annual Box Fan Convention going on, the Expo, I should say. All that and more coming up here on Out of Line.
Coach Sanchez, less than a week away from the first game of the 2018 season. How you feeling?
Doing great. You know, it's been a good fall camp, and we're all excited to get going again.
Talk to me about this year's team. I know you've got a lot of expectations. Your fourth campaign, Coach. What are you expecting?
You know, we're expecting good things. We have a deeper roster and a really experienced roster. You know, especially when you look up front on that offensive line, you know, the running back area, wide receiver, you know, quarterback coming back. There's a lot of guys there with a ton of games under their belt. And then, you know, we're looking to see some improvement on defense. You know, we've got some veteran guys. You know, we got an older linebacking core that just has a bunch of experience. And I think we're in a better situation corner wise. Got to be productive with the safety group. And the D line's been the big deal over camp. You know, I think we've got more bodies that can come in and contribute than we've had in the past. And then obviously you got to move the needle on special teams. But overall, I like the roster. The guys have had great buy-in throughout camp, and they're excited and ready to go.
Talking about, you mentioned the experience. I mean, I'm looking at this roster. I see one redshirt freshman starting on your offensive line. Got a pretty good receiver in this Talik Collins that is also a freshman. But I don't see a lot of lower classmen, for lack of a better term, starting this year.
No, when you look at the group, I mean, it's the first time we've had a lot of older guys that have experience that have been around, and the crazy thing about it too is, like, for example, let's say you just take the offense, right? You know, Lex is back and X, and you got Jacobson and, you know, the whole line Armani stuff. So it's an older group that has started a ton of games, and literally we've got three seniors on it. I mean, when you look at the two deep on offense, 18 of the 22 are underclassmen, but they're all experienced. So it's kind of funny. We're an older team now, but we're still, young, and that's great. I mean, that bodes well for this year and the future.
Talk about this offensive backfield, Coach. I mean, there's got to be a lot of expectations. You got Mountain West freshman of the year, Armani Rogers, who everyone's so high on. I know you want to see him be a little more consistent, but how about that running back with Charles Williams now? The ankle's healthy. He's at 100%. And, of course, Lexington Thomas, a really decent chance of breaking the all-time rushing record at UNLV.
Yeah, like you said, you know, Rogers is doing just fine. He played like a freshman last year and played like a damn good freshman. So we're excited, and, you know, that a year of experience is going to make him even better, and he'll be just fine. And, you know, when you look at the backfield, too, I mean, again, you know, when you talk about, you know, Williams and Thomas, those special dudes. But then, you know, you got Campbell and Owens right there with them, too. So there's four guys there that are really good college football players. And, you know, obviously Lex is a special guy, and we think Chuck is, too, with elite speed. So that stable of running backs with Armani, with the older offensive line, and really it's the deepest receiving group we've had since we've been here too. You got Woods and Presley, and, you know, and Keys back. Techman, you know, had a hernia surgery, which really, you know, sped him up, and he looks a lot better. Makai Stevenson, and, you know, he's a guy that, you know, we've got a redshirt year back, so we, you know, he's only a sophomore this year. He's finally healthy, ready to go. And then you said Tylee Collins, so we've got more speed and, you know, and capability to have big plays this year than I think we've had in the past.
One more question on the offensive line. I think a lot of people thought Zach Singer, he was hurt last year, would come back in as a center, but you've moved Sid Acosta into that role as the starter, the junior transfer out of Riverside City College. This is a big guy to play in the middle at center. 6 foot, 6'1", and he's 305 pounds.
He is, you know, and we kind of thought that Sid would end up winning that battle last year and be the center, you know, and Singer would be the guard and or, you know, center, you know, backing him up. And, you know, he actually went down and Singer ended up starting and he got hurt. So the good thing is to develop depth because, you know, you've got a, you know, a Costa at center and Singer now at guard, but Singer's also a center behind him. And then you have Caldwell, who started at both guard and tackle before. And, you know, he's playing both those positions. And Nathan Jacobson has also played both tackles. You know, so he's in there. And then you've got Donovan Outlaw, who's, you know, had a great offseason, and he's probably the most athletic of the entire group. And so when you look at Justin Polo, who's got a chance to play on Sundays and be a great player, and, you know, now we had back surgery for Julio Garcia, and he's more comfortable, feeling better, and he's felt in a long, long time, so he adds a bunch of depth there. And then just yesterday, actually the day before yesterday, Justice Olawashon just got completely cleared to play. So, and now we got him back in the mix, and we, you know, we thought he'd be a special guy. We thought he'd be a starter going into the year. He missed spring, but as the season progresses, he's a guy that's going to come in and be a big impact. So we got a lot of really good, talented bodies in that area.
The defensive side of the ball, a new look this year, and obviously been an issue in your first three seasons, getting that defense shored up, getting them consistent. Seems like, again, you've got some upperclassmen. Jericho Flowers looks to really take a step and maybe be the leader of that defense this year. What are you expecting from them, and how improved are we going to see them be?
Well, we expect them to be improved, you know, and one of the biggest areas that we need to see that improvement is just takeaways and, quarterback pressures. You know, we didn't pressure the quarterback and resulted in, you know, really low sack number. And then when you look at the amount of takeaways we had, nowhere near to what we had done even in the past. You know, we've gotten better in that category, and it kind of regressed, you know, last year. So we got to see those two areas, do a little bit better and then play better on third downs. If we're better, more successful in those areas, then you're going to see a successful defense. But you're right, Jericho's done a really good job, and Jacquez Khalili is, he's really come along now going into his second year. We got to keep him healthy, but, you know, that corner group's pretty good. You know, Miles Plummer has made a great, you know, been a great addition to that group, you know, along with Robert. So I think we're better, and we've got more depth at the corner spot than we've had in the past. You know, that linebacker spot, I talked about that, you know, with Bailey Loalangi coming back and Javen White and Gabe McCoy. You know, there's three guys that have got a ton of reps under their belt, and I think they're going to play well. You know, and then you got Farrell Hester, who, you know, played a bunch last year, started some games, and, you know, now we got to find those, you know, the fifth and the sixth guys that kind of go with that group. But we're excited about them. But the one group I talked about earlier that really stands out is that D-line. You know, Mann and Alcy coming back, they're doing a really good job, you know, along with Wiley, but then, you know, the additions of, you know, Ezenwah and Johns, Manoa, and then UCK going into his sophomore year. I think we've got more bodies we can rotate in than we've had in the past.
Looking forward to seeing a coach fourth season again. Number one, what kind of pressure do you feel this year? And number two is you've got the new stadium right on the horizon. I know it's attracting already a lot of big schools that are going to now come to Vegas, which will equate to more revenue. But how comfortable are you right now in heading into your fourth season?
First time I thought about it when you asked, I mean, we're really comfortable. I mean, we got a great team. We're excited to get going. And I don't worry about any of that stuff, you know. And we've done a great job of, you know, building this program up and moving the needle. And we've been more successful, you know, in the first 3 years than, you know, people have previously. And I think we're going to continue to see that.
Talk about Saturday now. Finally, it's here. Saturday, USC, Southern Cal. I know you've got a lot of California guys on the team. Looking forward to going home. Jericho Flowers being one of those guys. You know, I know you want to be competitive. It's a big payday for for UNLV. What are you telling these guys to get ready to head into the Rose Bowl, an iconic stadium and a huge game for you?
Yeah, the great thing, though, is, you go in and you play the Coliseum, and, you know, none of our guys will be wooed about it, you know, because, you know, they've all, you know, they played in the Horseshoe, you know, they played in the Rose Bowl, and, you know, a lot of these guys were there for that. Armani was, you know, he's been in both those environments along with the rest of the team. So I think we'll be fine with the environment. They're going to be jacked up, though, going back to L.A. We got a lot of L.A. kids on the team. Armani actually won a section championship in football playing in that stadium. So we got a bunch of guys that actually played there before at the high school level. But, again, it's the Trojans. It's exciting. 15th ranked team in the country, and, you know, I mean, it's we know the number one opponent we play every week is ourselves. So if we take care of ourselves, take care of the little things, you know, just, you know, be detailed. detail-oriented, play really fast, really hard, really physical. We'll give ourselves a shot. I mean, a couple years ago, we had a great chance to win a game, you know, in the Rose Bowl against UCLA, and you know, fell a little short. And, you know, played decently last year against Ohio State. You know, they kind of got after us, you know, when it was all said and done. But our guys have shown up and played really well in those games, and we expect to do the same thing Saturday and go fight for a W.
Good luck to you there, Coach. And final question. You're talking to the UNLV nation out there right now. What can they expect to see from UNLV football this year, and why should they come out and watch?
They should come out and watch because, you know, these kids have worked extremely hard. And I'll tell you what, over the years, I think they've shown everybody that we've built a competitive program here. And, you know, we've been close. You know, we got that chip on our shoulder falling the game short last year. And we want to remedy that and get ourselves into the postseason. But it's been a long time since we've been this competitive, you know, year in and year out. You know, so, hey, you know, come on out, support the boys. You know, be that 12th man and help us get into that postseason.
Hey, Coach Tony Sanchez, greatly appreciate you joining the show. And thank Mark Wallington because I know Sunday's like your first day off and forever, and so I didn't have you come on live with us Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll let you enjoy your day off.
Yeah, we actually get 3 hours off in the morning, so we know we're still working, but yeah, I appreciate that.
All right, hey Coach, we'll see you on the sidelines in a week or two.
You got it. Take care. Go Rebs.
Bye-bye.
Tony Sanchez, coach of the UNLV Rebels. We'll see what they do this year. Tim and I both discussed it while he was on. We're saying 6-6. We'll see, man. That would make him bowl eligible, and I think that would give him job security for at least another year. We're quickly going to go over to the back to the phone lines. Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com, 90-plus thousand subscribers, become one of them. Alan, it is your Sports Biz Minute right now, and talking about Raiders tickets.
Yes, the big day came. The big day came this week for the Raiders fans in Las Vegas. The folks who put down $100 for a deposit, they began getting emails from the Raiders ticket folks in terms of how much it will cost, not only for their personal seat license but also for their ticket cost. So, obviously, the reserve seat will be less than the personal seat licenses for the club seats that came out a few weeks prior, and I had an interesting talk with Mark Davis, the owner of the Raiders, who said that he felt that between 70% to 75% of the fans who will buy the reserve seats at the Raiders Stadium will be local Las Vegas and Nevada residents. He estimated about 10% will be coming from Oakland, and another 10% coming from Southern California.
It's good to hear. You want the local fan base. I think the Raiders are going to be very well supported here. I think the NFL is going to do very well. I've had a few arguments, and I'm surprised on it. Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. Check it out. Become a subscriber. You're going to love the website. It is a whole different feel in the business side of sports. Alan, always appreciate you, my friend.
Terrific. Have a great week. I'll talk with you guys next week.
Absolutely. From Alan Snell, we head right back out to the phone lines. We have Alonzo Benazara, and he is...
Benazara.
Let me get it right. I'm sorry, Alonzo. He is the producer of the 4th Annual Fan Box Expo coming up here in a couple weeks. Talk to me, Alonzo. This is going to be a great event. It's the 4th Annual, and people, you are going to see anybody who's anybody in the sport of boxing should be there, right?
100%. And it's the Box Fan Expo on the same day as the Canelo Triple G fight. We're expecting thousands of people coming out. We got some of the best fighters in the world, top boxing celebrities. We just, last week I was on the show, we announced some of the fighters. This weekend we keep adding more fighters. We got none other than Mikey Garcia that's going to be at the Box Fan Expo Saturday, September 15th at the Las Vegas Convention Center. You can check it out on the website, www.boxfanexpo.com. We also announced Abner Maris, who's going to be at the expo. We're also going to have James Lights Out Tony.
Wow.
We got none other than Tommy the Hitman Hearns, Badu Jack, David Benavidez, the Jose Benavidez brothers. We got Mia St. John, Jesse Vargas, the great Eric Morales, Fernando Vargas, El Feroz, and we're going to keep adding more and more fighters. We got the WBC that's going to have their own booth at the expo. We got Mayweather Promotions with their own booth. We got the WBA that's going to bring some of the top legends at their own booth. It's going to be crazy. We have an amateur big boxing show as well that's going to have all the best USA boxing amateurs there. So the best amateur boxers under the same roof with all the top best boxers in the world. It's going to be a crazy weekend. It's Canelo Triple G weekend on the same day, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Before you go to the fights, check out all your over 30 to 40 top fighters, boxers in the world that's going to be at the expo. Meet and greet all the fans there. Take pictures, autographs, face-off, photo booth. It's going to be incredible. Fourth year.
Fourth annual Box Fan Expo. Again, that is going to be at the Las Vegas Convention Center, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., as he said, the Canelo Triple G fight. That is September the 15th, and right now, 876-1340. We got a few pairs to give away, admissions to get you in. Give us a call right now, and we'll get you on the list, but only first couple callers get in. Alonzo, appreciate you joining the show. We'll talk to you again next week. Hopefully, we'll have a fighter on with us as well and talk a little bit more about the expo.
Of course, and remember, it's only $30 online. You got to get them down because there's going to be thousands of people. It's going to be an incredible boxing fan experience event.
Yeah, right here in Las Vegas before the biggest fight of the year.
BoxFanExpo.com. BoxFanExpo.com. Don't miss it.
There you go. $30 admissions at the door. Beforehand, definitely get them beforehand. And again, you can win some right now. 22. That is 876-1340. Box Fan Expo, the fourth annual coming up. Appreciate you, Alonzo. Oh, okay, he's gone. Hey, listen, we're just about out of time. Tim, talk to me real quick. I know we don't have much time, but fantasy football this year, if you've got number one pick in the draft, are you going with Le'Veon Bell, or are you skipping over him and going with last year's rushing leader, Todd Gurley?
I'd go Gurley. I think he's number one on a lot of people's boards.
Me too. I mean, Le'Veon Bell's got to prove he can stay healthy for an entire season. What about number one quarterback? I got Aaron Rodgers still. What about you?
That just seems to be the every year it's Aaron Rodgers, but I wouldn't sleep on Drew Brees again.
I wouldn't sleep on Deshaun Watson. If this guy can stay healthy, he might surprise the hell out of you with absolutely fantasy numbers. Number one receiver, still got to be Antonio Brown, but I like Odell Beckham in a comeback year.
Yep. Brown's the guy, though.
Brown's the guy, number one. Yeah. Hey, Tim Unglesby, check him out Saturday, Sunday nights right here, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, 10 p.m. start time. Tonight you're on to 1, right?
1 a.m. We got college football, NFL previews tonight.
I'll be listening, brother. I'm looking forward to the fantasy league we got coming up soon. I don't know if I'm going to win. Maybe I'll finish in sixth place. Do you got a trophy for last place?
We just donate money in that league.
Okay. So. Hey, we're out of time. This is Out of Line. We're here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 a.m. Fox Sports Radio, 1340 a.m., 98.9 FM, home of the...